CIUT 89.5 FM, celebrating 35 years as the sound of your city.
And it's a Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon of Classical Underground, 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesdays. How you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
I'm in urban shock because COVID is gone and I can't find a parking place. So I think it's Rogers.
Well, you never could find
I'm blaming Rogers.
You could never find a parking place when we didn't have COVID. So some things never change.
What's that?
I said you could never find a parking place when we didn't have COVID, right? So,
COVID period was different. You know, it was, you know, there's a ghoulish atmosphere out there. I was going to say I would blame it on Rogers. I think that's a good fallback position. The city is blessed. You know, we have a mayor who's a member of the board at Rogers. So, we're in like Flynn. I mean, how could anything? Oh, he just has to pick up the phone and Rogers runs and does things.
You know, Phil, I think some people have pointed out that this is a family that just tore themselves apart with a public feud, beating each other up in public.
Oh, do you suspect the daughter? I'm sorry.
There you go.
I'm getting ahead of me.
And of course, they packed old mama off to the graveyard right after the feud settled down, right?
Boy.
But like, was anybody paying attention to the business, or have they reached that stage where they think that the income, they're entitled to it, they don't have to do anything to earn it?
You know, I think we're on a thing here. You know, they tell us, for example, when the economy went just totally flat, 2008?
Yeah.
It just fell on its face.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, damn the automakers, damn the bankers, damn the monopolies. And they said, no, don't say that. They're too big to fail.
Yeah.
Well, what if they fail? In this case, it's a failure.
Well, no, you have to change the definition of failure. It's not
bad. Well, yeah, put it on you.
Right, it's not so bad at all. Right. They fixed it up within a day. Except that they didn't, by the way, because there are people who still don't have it back.
Some don't, I guess.
Some don't. And you know, a lot of people make
part of the ones that didn't vote for Tory.
That's probably a connection.
I suspect.
But you know, I saw somebody from New Brunswick saying, I know that there's a lot of humor around this. She says, but nobody in New Brunswick could get an ambulance, you know?
Nice.
Nobody in New Brunswick could call a policeman, you know?
Yeah.
It was serious. You know?
It makes you, you wish they had police and healthcare debt. As I said, it's the Taylor Report, and now we got that our grievance off my chest. I want to talk a little bit about this story that has popped up, which people didn't seem to see coming. The Globe and Mail's headline, and this is Monday, July 11th, in case you gotten into the day and hadn't realized this is it, Monday. The headline says, Ukraine condemns Canada's move to return Russian turbines. Ottawa to issue export permit for gas turbines stranded by sanctions after appeal from Germany. So this there's a lot of meat on this bone. First of all, they got it wrong. See, that's the Globe wishes that Ukraine had condemned. Actually, the word they used, because it's in the, I would tell the headline writer, if you could read the article, it says that they, in their official statement, they were disappointed. And then, of course, there were several paragraphs nobody's going to read, but the word was they're disappointed. You start using words like condemn, and see, then that's like pushing, right? Oh, you pushed me. Well, I might push you. So also we could call this an oops moment. Because, as you know, we're the leading voice. Nobody like Canada is as solid in much solidarity and shoulder to shoulder and eyeball to back or whatever it is with in Ukraine, which is not much of a foreign policy. And we just came off the G20 meeting where, again, they were going in there and our foreign minister, I call her foreign minister, what is it, global affairs now? Global affairs. Said that it was going to, Russia was attending the G20 meeting and they were going to isolate Russia. That's what they said. We're going to isolate them, going to really embarrass them. There's this odd conversation where Macron says, we mustn't humiliate them. Well, yeah, speak for yourself. They don't look humiliated. They're not acting humiliated. And actually, since you're the one who put the, you guys all put the posters up and the neon signs, we're going to isolate them, that isn't what happened. And we'd been discussing, and I'm really struck by this today, because the story is now, what, 24 hours old? We started hearing, was it yesterday, Saturday? We were hearing about this. And the first story was, there's turbines here in Montreal that belong to Siemens, a German company, I understand, and that they had been requested to deliver them back to Germany or back for their use because it was going to be necessary to have those turbines in order to move the, I think it's liquid natural gas, did I get it right? And so the turbines are needed. Well, Canada said, no, we're not going to do that. This is some time back. We have sanctions. And if you know, remember Chrystia Freeland, she says, and these sanctions are going to bite. So they bit Germany. And a man named Schultz said, hey, I have turbines there and I want them. And they said, yeah, but they're going to be going to Russia. Yeah, but they're my turbines. You know, this. A lot of people get in this, right? When you're trying to buy something, I came here to buy this and you were going to deliver. So, well, we had FACE to worry about. But apparently in 24 hours or a few hours, FACE disappeared. And they now are saying, yeah, they're going. And it's not just, when I first heard about it, I thought it was one turbine. They're here for repairs. But it turns out there's actually a number of them, maybe 12, something like that, turbines?
It was a lot more than one. The more number I heard was six, but they said maybe more.
Maybe more.
Yeah, six, maybe more.
So we went, this Taylor Report would like people who have titles and are leading things to demonstrate their command of the field, you know, like they know what they're doing. Because what they did, I mean, I think Canada, judging by, I checked the CBC, and I went to find out what the leader of the NDP was thinking. A lot of people would wonder, Phil, what are you thinking? Those are the two places. Anyway, I went to those two places just to see reaction. Now, my understanding is the Conservatives are saying they're very unhappy about this, I guess. But the NDP hasn't yet said anything. The CBC, I was looking at their headlines just as I thought that would be headline number one, like, well, like the Globe today. It's not. They're talking about, I forget, something, tennis? I don't know. I think the country is going to have whiplash because they're going to say, we're ready to practically go to the knife to defend Ukraine. And we're the leaders in solidarity, except we're going to send the turbines to Germany because why? Well, because Germany wants them. And they are receiving, as you know, gas from Russia. By the way, the Americans told them, don't. And then they did. And then the Americans did the old trick of saying, well, that's okay. We're going to give you a pass on that one. So they say, well, you're going to give me a pass to take the gas, then Canada's going to have to give me the turbine. Well, I'm not going to call him. You call him. Okay, I'll call him. I need those turbines. I mean, this is how it goes. And I think that we've been talking on the show about this. We have people who want to be like Banty Rooster. They want to stand on a roof and make a noise. But the world out there is a pretty tough place, and the Banty Roosters get chased. I mean, you know, there's just so many feathers, and it's over. We need actually a true and honest policy proportional to the amount of power we represent, and also, you know, a degree of honesty. The matter with between Russia and Ukraine did not start in February this year. That chapter started this February this year. But the actual problem started, and particularly if we're going to talk about NATO, and we're going to come to NATO, by the way. We have to talk about Sweden and Finland. I'm sorry to tell you this, Phil, but we're going to have to review the career of Mr. Sibelius, which I'm sorry, I looked into it. It's not good. Anyhow, NATO decided after Victoria Nuland, did I get her name right?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I did.
She distributes cookies.
She's the what? Yes, the one who, she's a Ukrainian leader. Because I saw her myself with my own eyes in Maidan Square with a plastic bag full of cookies and I think donuts. Yeah. And she was giving them to all the nice people there because she wanted them to do something for her, which was to overthrow the government. Or maybe they just done it. I don't know. She was putting on a show. But the Americans were in the middle of that. They had a crisis. You recall, there was a party of regions leading Ukraine. They had won an election. They had to make the big decision over, are you going to sign a deal with the Western European countries, which will includes exclusion. The deal must exclude Russia. You know, and he said, when it came right down to it, he said, I can't do it. you got to give me a little room here. Because as our neighbor, a good portion of our population are Russian speakers. And we are the party of regions. We're trying to represent the various regions. It's like the Liberal Party represents a lot of the time Quebec, right? When a federal election comes, the question is, who can span the country? That would have to include the French speakers. And that's been a key to, if you want to become elected in Canada, you better make nice. There are people who don't like to make nice, and occasionally they rise up, Calgary, Yellowknife, I don't know where they are, but they're out there. I know they wear cowboy hats. And they said, oh, we're not going to make nice to those guys. Well, so Ukraine had a similar kind of situation. I'm not saying to the liberals you're going to be wiped out and trampled upon by Victoria Nuland. Maybe, but anyhow. So the Americans went in there in 2014, full blast. And when I say full blast, this is not, they didn't go in with a newspaper or a leaflet like you and I would have done. They went in there with big money, really big money. And on top of that, after they got the change of power, which was illegal, the power was seized when, after a promise had been made to the sitting president that he would step down. France, Germany, Switzerland, some other, Sweden was in on this. I got something against the Swedes too. You have to remind me what I got against them, but they were there to oversee that this was resigned, the Party of Regions, if he resigned and they would hold a new election in a certain, and they even said when. So he stepped down, violence broke out, he fled for his life, and they said, oh, we've had a revolution. And it was a revolution by the people who took the cookies and donuts from Victoria Nuland, of all people. They were the ones, and not only, some of them had their names on it, you recall? Victoria Nuland said, the guy Yats, he's the one we want. We'll put Yats in. And the boxer, what's his name?
Klitschko.
Yeah. Klitschko. Yeah. She says, Klitsch. I think she uses nicknames for everybody because she can't remember their name. So Klitsch, we make him maybe the mayor of, give him something.
Yeah. And that's what they did. They made him the mayor.
Hey, strange things happened. It turned out that he got to be mayor. And then the guy, Yatsenyuk, I did it, the whole name. He was put in, just as she said. And when they got their people in, they began to say, okay, now we have a pal. I mean, these guys are the real Ukrainians. Well, the problem is you know, Phil, the regions of the country, because I remember the clue in the name of the party that used to rule, Party of Regions, there were regions that said, hey, we didn't vote for any of this. You guys promised us an election. I said, well, no, we're not going to have an election. And by the way, you can't speak Russian anymore. We've decided, because we're going to, you know, fulfill our deepest, fondest dreams. Well, that we're raising this because Canada should have played a more responsible role and should have said, listen, you should have the election. You promised. You should have that election. And people shouldn't be threatened by these guys in the streets. This should be an actual election, a fair one. That should have been Canada's position. That was not Canada's position. Canada immediately went into the hooray position, backing Victoria Nuland. And when I say Victoria Nuland, I mean, you have to talk about her because she's the permanent American imperialist foreign policy person. She was there when the Clintons were there, I think. She goes as far back as the Clintons. There's always some member of her family. Anyhow, they're all... This is our, what they call the Atlantic people. Maybe they even have the name. Is it Atlanticist? But they have it. And it's like a club.
Something like that, yeah.
And she's been there all through. Yeah. But then they provided weapons. They started providing weapons. Now, in the Donbass region, it's in the headlines, kids, look it up. In the Donbass region, they said, no, you're not going to come here and rule us. Incidentally, the people they made governors were what are people like to say oligarch. We only use the word oligarch in Russia. Ukraine has oligarchs. Do you remember Poroshenko?
Yeah, he was Poroshenko. The chocolate man.
They now had another O to his name. It's Poroshenko. Poroshenko. He is the chocolate king of Ukraine. By the way, if I was going to join a group, I mean, I would like to be with Poroshenko. He's got the monopoly on chocolate. That's another question. So they named people to be governors over those people, and the people didn't accept it. What do you think was going to happen if somebody from... let's say a suburb of Calgary takes over in the name of the whole Canadian country and says, from now on, it's English all the way, and you coddle the French too much. And you think they're going to swallow that? No, they'll do to you what they've done in history. They will resist. So there was resistance. So we needed a solution. We needed somebody to say, let's have a compromise. Well, compromises, and with that, we're talking about 2014. So 2014 to now, they said there's going to be some kind of an arrangement to accommodate that the people of that region who are largely Russian speakers. Well, it got neglected. Nothing happened. So here we are. At no time did Canada play a responsible role, which would be a role in which we would exercise Canadian sovereignty and say, well, Biden has an opinion, Trump has an opinion, but Canada, we've been thinking about this. And by the way, we're familiar with the national question because we have Quebec. And so we had a little feel for it. If you want to stand in for us, how about Belgium? Belgium has a bit of a problem. And they wrestle with this. So get somebody who understands and then say, let us solve this. But it became, no, these guys want to join NATO. We think that's fine. And we're giving them weapons so that they can solve that problem with that national group in the East, Donbass. Well, it led to what it led to. We're seeing shock and awe here. Everybody, oh, my God, I can't believe this is... Well, what did you think was going to happen? I mean, you have 20/20 vision, or you have a rough idea. It's just you started the problem in 2014, and you butted in, and it wasn't just, of course, the U.S., but Canada played a big role in all of that. So when we talk about our current problem, I hate to say it, but the current problem, 2022, is what it was in 2014. That is, do the right thing. If they had the thing called the Minsk Agreement, again, that's on the UN ledger. You're aware that they took that to the Security Council, and they said, here's how we will solve this. And France was one of the parties to that. Russia often says, France, what happened to that? You're signing that Minsk Accord. And the French say, well, we're working on it. See, that's how, again, we reached this point where the game of isolating was going on and excluding. So if Russia would ask you a question, you didn't have to answer. You remember on the Taylor Report, Phil, we read the letter written by the Russians, public letter. And they said, this is getting nastier and nastier. And we are, if you don't know it, we're a member of the Security Council. We participated in World War II. We haven't been scolded for our part. Ignored, but not scolded. And we expect when we say something to you, you will respond. But you don't. And we noticed we were watching. We noticed you, and you decided to bomb Serbia. And you brought your German friends with you, by the way. The Germans said, hey, we get to bomb Serbia. It's been a long time, you know. They got to go in. They sent fighter planes. And then they bombed Belgrade, killed, we all remember, the Chinese journalists. Or I hope we all remember. Chinese journalists were killed. It looked like a targeting, and the Americans denied, but you say, so you can't read a map. Okay. They said, you decided to move the furniture in Europe. You decided you didn't want Yugoslavia anymore. You broke it into pieces. And the leading voice in Europe, by the way, to break it up was our old friend Germany. He said, break this thing up, and I'll take the good ones, and you can have the other guys. And they brought out their warplanes and did all that. And then they took a part of Serbia called Kosovo. They took it. There's the largest American military base in Europe is in Kosovo, which is not a country, actually. It's a stolen piece of real estate. And I don't know where their manners are. I mean, it's one thing to steal it, but to put an army base there, it's got a, by the way, what's the name of that base? Can you remember, Phil? It's got a scary name. And in downtown Kosovo, whatever the town is, there are statues to Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. The only place in the world you'll find a statue of Bill Clinton and Hillary is in the taken territory. Which, by the way, they did not have a referendum. As you may know, Crimea is now part of Russia following a very popular referendum. Kosovo did not have a referendum. It was taken. I'm telling you all this history just to say this is how far off the highway we have gotten, and we better head back to the highway because the people leading us now are starting to stumble over themselves and each other. When Germany calls Canada and says, not kidding now, we want those, turbines. And Canada says, yes, sir. Because Canada is not in the same league with Germany. Even though Germany is still occupied, it's not in the same league.
Phil, I have to tell you that the Americans' camp, that's what they call it, a camp.
They call it a camp?
Camp. Is Camp Bondsteel.
Bondsteel.
See, you can't make this
sounds
up.
Like, yeah, if I had, I would have thought that was a movie.
Yeah.
Bondsteel.
Well, maybe it is.
Yeah, it's probably a brand. It's put right. It on your belt.
Bondsteel. Camp Bondsteel. Right. Yeah.
So that's where we got led in down the garden path by people who didn't realize that actually, see, the G20 is not an American club. I mean, the Americans throw weight around, but you know, at the G20, the meeting just happened. By the way, I'm saying this for the benefit of Ukraine too. Listen, these guys, they will dump you in a minute because they're crowding each other. And when you say the Globe got it, they want to say Ukraine condemns. They didn't condemn because if you condemn, then you could be on the short list, right? Because that's not nice. That's not appreciation.
So then why would the Globe have put that in?
Because that's what they want them to say.
Yeah.
They would
right.
like them to say.
Yeah.
But, that's an additional problem. Some of the ambassadors of Ukraine in Western Europe have kind of misunderstood what their role is. And they've gone a little over the edge in commenting on Polish history, Ukrainian history, and German history.
You mean to think that they thought that they represented an actual sovereign country?
Well, they actually, I think they were assured probably by none other than Victoria Nuland that, you know, you're it. I mean, we're going to make you a star. And, you know, you got a powerful, they'd like to say the most powerful country. We know it's unique. We know it is, what do they call it?
Exceptional country.
It's exceptional.
Yeah.
So it's exceptional. So when the most powerful country on earth, and then the exceptional, the one and only, tells you, we got your back, man, you think you can fly. But I have to tell you, the great eagle is hitting turbulence. In thinking about the title for the show today, I was thought, well, should we say that NATO is growing or splitting? Because I think it is growing. And I think it's splitting. Not that it's going to fall apart, but it isn't what people think it is. And they ran a heavy bluff by putting weapons ahead of time into Ukraine. And then when Ukraine said, okay, we want to be in NATO, they said, well, you have a right to apply, and therefore we're ready to fight Russia over your right to apply. But no, it didn't happen. So this is the part where I think Canadians ought to be talking. See, instead of going on television as the three blind mice and saying, you know, we're with America, whatever it is. I mean, we'll find out our foreign policy when Biden tells us. You're going to get hurt doing that. You're going to hurt the Canadian people. You're going to put them at risk. They thought, for example, when you said we're keeping the turbines, they thought you meant that. And they thought you were big enough to back it up. You're not big enough to back it up. Somebody else is bigger, and he's going to have his way. But there's going to be more bumping because, okay, you know, bumps leave bruises. And so the guy's going to remember, you bumped me. So later in the game, we do hockey now, I'm going to bump you back. And taking this forward again, back to the G20, where the claim was we're going to isolate Russia. G20 is not NATO, but so what happened? The countries that are not whiter than white showed no interest in doing what the Globe wanted them to do, which was condemn Russia. That's because they have their own issues. A lot of them have issues with all of the times that the United States has bombed them without even a phone call first and killed their leaders, trampled over their countries, left footprints and almost plague-like conditions, nobody gave a damn about them. No one, when the African unions made a direct appeal to NATO and to the United States and to the UN saying, Mr. Gaddafi has been a good friend of Africa, and we're concerned that this is getting out of hand, that the people of Libya are going to suffer. We want an end to the fighting and people's lives preserved, and the UN should do something. NATO should. Nobody answered. Nobody cared. You know, that was unanimous in Africa, except for one country, Rwanda, agreed with the Americans bombing Gaddafi. I remember Paul Kagame wrote a letter of why I am in favor of overthrowing the government of Libya, which, by the way, was entirely illegal. It was not, you know. And, of course, there is a U.S. base, army base, in Syria, in an oil field where they extract Syrian oil and ship it to nobody knows where. And so, in other words, at the G20 meeting, there were people who, states represented, who know about this stuff. So they say, what, you're not in favor of somebody attacking their neighbor and taking their oil? And that sounds like something happened in Syria. No. So the hypocrisy and the lies around all this is gross, putting it mildly. So long story short, Russia wasn't isolated. Mr. Lavrov was there. He went around. He met everybody that he wanted to meet. And what's his name? Blinken? What a sorry name for State Department. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. People have names, but, you know, you're the Secretary of State, Blinken. Anyhow, Blinken, he said, I'm not going to have my picture taken with Lavrov. And Lavrov said, I didn't ask him. He wasn't invited. I mean, is he that insecure? It's like Norman Mailer talking about Thomas Wolfe. And Wolfe said, I'm a great writer. He said, oh, what? I didn't know any. What, is it important to you to tell me that? I'm really sorry for you, kid. But I know. I mean, so we're watching a meltdown. G20 didn't go well. That was a show that didn't happen. And the situation with the turbines, I don't know, maybe it'll damage. We'll see whether conservatives get 2 or 3 votes out of it. I doubt it, actually, because I think there's a kind of sober thing going on in people's minds. The population, I don't mean political leaders, who they still yammer like they do, but you can tell that there's something going on where there's a mood. Winter's going to come, and they need the gas that Russia supplies at the price that they supply it. So if you're not going to allow that to happen, you're going to ask all these people to go through a bunch of price rises, price of fuel, damage to the economy, job loss, all these things. And then you're going to say, we're doing this for Ukraine. They're not going to do that, because they're going to say, why don't you try to solve the problem there? And do you have a plan? Is your plan, what's your plan? Is it a confrontation? I know Hillier would like a confrontation, General Hillier. He's already signed up, not for the Canadian Army, but with somebody. He signed up, he's gonna go and give advice. And when he went to Afghanistan, Phil, he really fixed him, remember? Yeah, they said, well, General Hillier, what are you gonna do? We said, we're gonna kill the scumbags.
Yeah.
So you remember?
I do.
Maybe you could remind me. How did that turn out?
Yeah.
They destroyed him, right? Yeah, because, I mean, he's a rough, tough general. He wears a beret.
Right, except that the scumbags.
A rakish beret.
The scumbags are running the place now, and the Canadians aren't there anymore. But, hey. You
know. We left, I guess.
I think so.
Every time I pick up the paper when they talk about Afghanistan, they say that we left some friends there. But we didn't mean to. Mm-hmm. It's just. And, yeah. But by the way, Afghanistan has some holdings, money, abroad. We have taken their money.
Well, of course.
That now that it's when ours. They face a cold winter and food shortages, they'll know that we're holding on to their money, which that really makes them love us even more than they used to love us, and General Hillier. So,
Phil, can I make a point about the Siemens turbines? Siemens is a German company, but they have this huge facility in Montreal. It's a good industrial facility which employs a very large number of industrial workers in Montreal. They've been there for a long time. Those turbines, the people who work on those turbines are highly skilled people. That's a routine annual maintenance. They actually send them over every year, right? So, how was it playing? Did the Bloc Québécois talk at all about the fact that the jobs of these Quebecers was being, threatened,
Yeah. Well, yes. I think they would like Siemens to be respected. I think we'll take a break. And given the mood that we have struck here, we're going to play a little bit of poor old Mara with Judy Collins. And that'll get that off. We'll feel better afterwards. And we'll come back, Phil and I. CIUT, Taylor Report.
After the revolution and the old king's execution, 4 years after, remember how those courtiers took their final bow. String up every aristocrat, out with the priests and let them live on their fat. 4 years after we started fighting, Mara keeps on with his writing. 4 years after the Bastille fell, he still recalls the old battle yell. Down with all of the ruling class, throw all the generals out on their ass. Why do they have the gold? Why do they have the power? Why? Do they have the friends at the top? Why do they have the jobs at the top? We've got nothing, always had nothing, nothing but holes and millions of them. Living in holes, dying in holes, holes in our bellies and holes in our clothes. Mara, he fought and he fought unafraid, sniffing down traitors by traitors betrayed. Marat in the courtroom, Marat underground, sometimes the otter and sometimes the hound, fighting all the gentry and fighting every priest, the businessman, the bourgeois, the military beast. Marat always ready to stifle every scheme of the sons of the ass-licking, dying regime. We've got new generals, our leaders.
How about that? We need say no more. Tell me, Phil, who is that guy that produced it?
Peter Brook was the producer and the director of the original production. I think the name of the guy who wrote the music was Weiss. I'm not sure of that, but I think it was. Anyway.
Toss it to Judy Collins. She really delivered.
Judy delivered, and you wonder why they don't why we don't get to go see that every year instead of Hamilton.
Yeah.
You know, I think they should close down Hamilton and put Marat Saad on. That's my suggestion.
Yeah, we were talking, by the way, people want to read about or follow. Lynn Slotkin was talking, fill this all in on
Peter Brook.
On Peter Brook's on Critics Circle.
Yeah.
And on Saturdays, 9 o'clock. I believe she's written about it. I know that she was very reminded us what a terrific career he had and how he was still working. I think he was born in 97. It's quite a story. Perfect segue for this is that I'll remind our listeners we have been beating him up with Robert Graves, of which I cannot get enough. But at any rate, we said on the air that there had been a mutiny by Canadian soldiers in 1919, and the 4th of March. Well, I'm filling in the details. We mentioned it. Graves mentioned it, saying that when it happened, it was led by people who broke out red flags, and they shouted. Some of them shouted, "Let's go Bolsheviks!" That was not an isolated phenomenon, Phil. You know, at the end of World War I, and any great war that ends, the people who fight those wars aren't professional soldiers. Those are people who, you know, they have to defend their country. They get called and they go. And they, when it's over, they're like, okay, I'm going to leave now. And they go home. While the British Army was holding on to these Canadians, most of the officers, as you know, were British. Rod Thorne, by the way, is a labor activist and veteran of movements, and also he tells me he was often went to Liverpool, quite near where this happened. According to Robert Graves, it happened in Rhyl, R-H-Y-L, Wales. The name of the camp was Kinmel Park, and there were 15,000 troops there. The problem was that they, of course, wanted to go home and had been promised they'd be going. But then they discovered that there was kind of a pecking list of, well, some are going, some are not going. And they were hearing, and we're sinking in, get in the ear of a soldier is a rumor. It's called, we call it scuttlebutt. The first thing you do, the commanding officer makes a speech, the lieutenant makes a speech, sergeant makes a speech, and then you walk over to the sergeant and say, well, what's the scuttlebutt? What's this, all this about? And then he'll say, I don't know either. As far as I'm concerned, they're crazy. That's usually how it goes. But they were in very poor quarters. Their food was lousy. It was wet and cold. And they sent delegations to the commanding officers and were basically ignored. By the way, so you notice in the first part of the program we talked about communications, Russia, U.S., Ukraine, U.N. Don't ignore people. You know, see how you can relate and see if you can solve a problem. But you start closing doors and not answering phones, you're looking for trouble. And officers have a real problem. They really do feel quite superior. There are areas in any base, it's called officer country. You don't go in there. You don't, unless you have a real good reason. So they made their petitioning and all that, and nothing happened. So on the 4th of March, the mutiny broke out. The report on what happened, it became violent overnight. One of the places they attacked was a place called Tin Town. And again, this is what happens. This is a base that had nearby, the merchants had been allowed to set up a little a tin town where they could, and they knew that the Canadian soldiers had more money than most soldiers. Canadian pay was better than some others. So they ran their prices up for everything. So the first thing, of course, they did was destroy Tin Town. It took a lot of effort. The other issue, one, by the way, that I can really relate to is remembering, is that the officers could go off the base. Here you're in miserable conditions. You're the only thing you got is Tin Town, which is, I gather, at the side of the base or in the base. But you can't go to town. You can't go visit, have a look at Wales. Can't go for a hike. You have to go. You have to stay on the base. But the officers could. They're officers. So, I mean, you know the word gentleman. He's an officer. That means he's a gentleman. So he gets to wander around where he wants. They covered up the casualties. It's still to this day being debated. I urge you to read a book by Noel Barbour called Gallant Protesters, published in 1975, telling, I think it talks about more than one of these mutinies. They call them riots, insurrection. By the way, the word you choose shows your politics. Many of the right-wing elements, they just want to call it a riot. Oh, it was a riot. Of course, legally, they called it a mutiny, and people were charged. The best thing coming out of this, look it up. It's called the Kinmel Park Mutiny, and Canadians should know about it. There are Canadian graves at the Marble Church, and I wish I could say Welsh, speak Welsh, but I'm going to take a shot at this. Bobble Midden. Bobble, Bottle Midden. I know my Welsh friends are already slamming their foreheads with their hands. The leader has been identified, the at least accused. His name was William Tarasevich. By the way, a Russian. He probably got drafted. He comes all the way to Canada from Russia, finds himself in the Canadian Army, finds himself in a Welsh, outside a Welsh town, being ripped off by the merchants of tin. He probably wanted to kill somebody. I'm putting thoughts in his head. So his name is William Tarasevich. He is buried there at the Marble Church near Rill. You can find it. And a second gentleman is Corporal Joseph Young. I'm sorry I don't have other names, but Corporal Joseph Young. And on his tombstone, it says, someday, sometime, we will understand. Pretty good sentiment. My guess is that's his family put that there. I believe one of the five's bodies were returned. Did I say, and I must emphasize, they actually were victorious. They said, we want a ship and we want to go home. We've had enough of this. And they said, no way, nobody, you are enlisted, you know, you got it, we're the boss. But right away, and the death settled, they got them out of there. It started in March, and by the end of March, all of them were removed. And they had come home to Canada. I'm sorry for William Tarasevich that he lost his life, but I got to tell him, he won. The other guys got to come home. And people who said, oh, we don't have any ships, they found up some ships. So that's why, you know, we played Judy Collins a while ago. So demand some things. Say, oh, no, don't give me that, you know, come back tomorrow. we want something. So anyway, we did hat off again to good old Robert Graves for pointing that out. Phil, I have to tell you, now Finland and Sweden are going to apply, right? They haven't actually joined.
They are. They have no reason to do it, but they're going to do it, and it's terrible. It's
yeah. You know. Well, it is interesting. The reporting is terrible. I take the remark made by the wonderful Charmaine Narwani. She said Finland and Sweden. Well, NATO just got even whiter. that's, you know, take a good close look. And they say, we, NATO, are going to isolate everybody. Almost by definition, they've isolated themselves. And of course, it's a club, exclusive club. It's like Wimbledon, you know. They excluded Russians, and then a Russian won the tennis match. So they said, yeah, but she's not a real Russian. She's a born-in Russian. She speaks Russian, but she's from Kazakhstan or something.
She lives in Russia.
She lives there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So we of Wimbledon can look down our noses. So, yeah, this is the problem. We want the Canadian parliamentarians, we want anyone seeking public office, to please speak to reality and face the fact that if you are going to get Sweden and Finland into NATO, you're creating problems for them. You ought to remind them. You see, if you become a member of the club, pal, you're going to give up a certain amount of your money to us to buy things that we manufacture, by the way. And then we may, because you're now a member of our defense team, we may want to put some things in your country, which... speaking plebeian speech, might draw fire. Because here's the response we heard from Moscow. Moscow said, you know, you guys are neutral. We don't have a problem with you. We get along, we do business, etc. Now you say you're going to be part of this group led by Joe Biden, and he doesn't talk to us very nice. And he has hardware like we got serious hardware here. And he's got it. So now you want to become part of that. Is that right? Why? You might want to count to 10. Think about it. We know you, by the way, Finland. You did attack us in World War II. And this brings me to Sibelius. Sibelius said, Mr. Goebbels formed a Sibelius Society, and Sibelius thanked him and sent his daughter to for the opening of the Nazi Germany Sibelius Society. And they were kind of weaselly about it. They didn't attack, you know, they didn't attack Leningrad. That was part of the deal. We'll join you and attack somewhere else. We're not going to attack. I think they realized, hey, these are neighbors. I mean, war may end, but this thing could go on a bit between us. We all know each other. We're back to an area. Remember, the name of Ukraine is Borderland. That's its name. That's what it means, border. And Lithuania, I'm getting ahead of myself. That Finland is kind of a road back and forth between Sweden and Russia. Did you know this, Phil? That Sibelius spoke Swedish and wrote in Swedish. His diary, kept a diary. That's in Swedish.
Yes, because the Swedes, as a colonial power in Finland, which they had been for many years, that was the educated people's language. And even to this day, Swedish is an official language in Finland because there are certain upper class
people. It is
people.
Now.
It is now. Yeah. There are certain upper class people who live in Helsinki who don't want to speak the local lingo.
They too have their problems with this. Yeah. That's why you don't want to wake everybody up. Yeah. You wake them up and they start to, they may react according to the old
way. Well, and here's another one too. There's an indigenous population in Finland. And yes, they look like white people, but they completely identify with all of the Arctic indigenous peoples with whom they're very close and have very warm relations. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the Finns aren't asking them, how do you feel about us entering this military alliance? I'm sure that they're called the Sami people. And I will tell you that the Sami people's opinions were never sought by the Finnish government, which is in the southernmost part of the country, by the way. You know,
yes.
Yeah. Very close to Russia.
No, they divided up. I think they have two great names for the rest of the world. I understand in Finland, you probably many famous people in Finland, like if somebody would, Mordecai Richter made a joke about George Chevalo. He's the world's champion of Canada. And every country has its, but the rest of the world says who? And then you name somebody. So there's two people we know. Sibelius, who wasn't the most honorable character, but anyhow, and then Mannerheim. Now, Mannerheim had been in the Tsar's army. He'd been with the Russians. And so in World War I, he was with the Russians. And the people that close to Sibelius were pro-Germany, and they formed a group. And you must know about it, Phil. There's a thing called the Jagger March. Written by Sibelius.
I didn't know any of this. I'm playing this guy's music on my program all the time.
Jagger March. It's a nice German word.
Yeah. It means a hunter. It's a hunter.
And they say, we don't have a country, we don't have a heart, but we have a spear. And they went to join with the Germans. So they went in opposite, people went different directions. Later they worked it out. The Jagger people, the ones who were very pro-German in the First World War, they wanted a monarchy, and they were going to get one, except that they lost the war. Funny things happen on their way to the market. So it is, again, I don't know why people are celebrating that, so they're going to join this military alliance. I wouldn't recommend it. I don't think it's a good idea, personally. But I would like to understand why anybody here doesn't talk about these things. Why did you expand NATO anyway? Why did you go take it east? I'm worn out with the subject of, well, they lied. They said they wouldn't, but they did. I knew they were lying when they were lying. I mean, give me a break. So why did they do it? And we should say, stop doing that. You know, it brings me to monuments. I read about Latvia, I read about Estonia or Ukraine or various places, and they say, in Poland, they smashed a monument to the Red Army soldiers. Well, I've got a problem with that. See, They were our allies. They were, Russia was fighting, killing. As my father once said, hey, I'm alive because of the Red Army. If I'd had to fight in Europe without the Russians, I wouldn't be here. You know, the Germans were a tough bunch, you know. That wasn't easy. And a monument to a World War II soldier should be sacrosanct to us, to Canadians, to Americans. Anybody who says they were for the destruction of Nazism, which was an ideology with a teeth, a racist white supremacy, ultimate white supremacist project, genocidal project, by definition, and according to its maximum leader, taking the lives of millions upon millions of people. You remember Jack Kennedy noticed that. He gave a famous speech. Is that why they shot him? I doubt it. But anyhow, he gave a speech in which he said, we have to appreciate how much Russia meant to us in defeating Nazism, fascism. Which brings me to a passage, by the way. I have it right here. And he says that and wonders if he has it. Yes, this is Thomas Mann. You heard of Thomas Mann.
God bless him.
Yes. God bless him. Okay. And he says he was mad. He didn't want to see Spain join the United Nations. He says, listen, I got a problem with Franco, just as the Taylor Report has a problem with destroying statues of our allies. And he goes, pick it up here. He says, to make common cause with him, to bolster his shaking pedestal by making treaties with him, a sworn enemy of our cause, to concede a position of neutrality to him is equivalent to a confession before the world that we do not know what we want, or that we know only too well that in secret we want the survival of fascism. In secret. Yeah. See, anybody puts his hands on a statue of anyone who gave their life to defeat Nazism, anybody puts his hand on that and says, I'm going to break this up because he's touching you in the flesh. Us. Fighting fascism was the ultimate war. And to water it down and say, whoa, some of these fascists are not so bad. No. We need to talk this through. And I think we ought to flesh out those people and say, oh, let's be clear about this. You're okay with a Hitler image on an arm? Well, I've seen a lot of those lately. You're cool with a swastika, are you? See, that shows that we're the ones who are sick. We have a problem. They don't know what Nazism represented. So that's why, to bring the story home, as they say, we have to have a clear rethinking. And now that you've dropped your pants and given them the Siemens, their machinery back, because actually you couldn't back it up your big mouth, because you actually ran into reality, run into some more reality, rethink your entire foreign policy, separate yourself from Trump and Biden and Clinton, that whole gang, and Victoria Nuland, and be done with it. We need an independent Canadian foreign policy. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM.